Here it comes again. Lunch. Will it be the same old, same old? Or are you ready to take a vacation from the ordinary with the new Jamaican Jerk Turkey Sub at Firehouse Subs? Freshly sliced smoked turkey breast, craveably sweet mustard sauce, and a hint of Caribbean seasoning. Just $5.55 for a medium. Save time. Order the new Jamaican Jerk Turkey Sub on the Firehouse Subs app. Firehouse Subs. Enjoy more subs. Save more lives. Participating locations, limited time only, plus tax. Prices may vary for delivery.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
It is August. It is time for the now third biggest weekend in WWE during the calendar year. It is time for SummerSlam and all the events it entails. I am Jeff Hawkins, here as always with my co-host Chris Novembrino. And Chris, an experiment in France showed that women solicited in the street for their phone number were more willing to give it to men if they were carrying a guitar case.
Well, I mean, there's hope for me yet, I suppose.
I'm like, this is science? This is what we're getting to now? No, apparently.
How do you get the financing for that study, right?
300 like,
young. We're going to do a study on this?
300 young women were solicited in the street for their phone number by a young male Confederate who held either a guitar case or a sports bag in his hands or had no bag at all. Results show that holding a guitar case was associated with greater compliance to the request, thus suggesting that musical practice is associated with sexual selection. Somehow I don't think a guy with a sousaphone would be getting phone numbers. I don't think musical is necessarily the barometer here.
Yeah, speaking of musical, what an off-pitch study for the Me Too moment that we are in right now. Just go up and be, like, skeezy to women and try to get their number, just walking up to them on the street like that. That's, maybe it flies in France, but, like, I think it would get you in serious trouble in certain cities here in the United States.
It's the journal Psychology of Music, and they were all French professors, and I just think, you know what? Just get a French guy in New York City. And he's getting phone numbers just for being French. So, I mean, it's not exactly the most scientific study in the world to me, but I laughed at that. Yeah, so it's SummerSlam. It's TakeOver. It's the dead of summer, Chris. This is what they do.
It really feels like the dead of summer this year. This is, they are limping into SummerSlam time.
I am so happy someone else agrees with me, because it's only been 3 weeks since the last quote-unquote big event, and they really, none of these builds feel as hot as they should be. There were a few that had potential. And there are a few that people are kind of backtracking and imagining heat, where like the Kofi Orton one, which has been a decent build, but it could have been so much hotter. It could have been Kofi mad as hell at Randy Orton and just ready to tear his throat out, and I'd be all for this. But the other problem is the NXT build hasn't been anything to write home about either, and it's really, I mean, look, we say it a lot here on this show. Do not doubt NXT takeovers, because they are always going to deliver. But at the same time, this NXT television for the past few weeks,
all the storylines have felt weird. Every major pay-per-view match on that takeover, I think the match itself is going to deliver. But when you actually look at the beats of the story, there were several good ones and then one that made you scratch your head.
Yeah, and also I think they've been doing a little bit too much instead of focusing on these things, like the the New Stars tournament has been in here. They've been trying to get other storylines going that don't focus on it. So the focus on angles has really not been there, and you're exactly right. There'd be like 2 weeks where something was great, and then 1 week where you're just going, huh? And it's kind of weird, but we'll go through all the cards. First up, though, some WWE news and notes from the week. On Raw, if you watched that, we have new women's tag team champions, Chris. Those valued NXT women's tag champs. As Alexa Bliss and Nikki Cross win a four-way match. When Alexa Bliss pins Kairi Sane, which is fascinating in its own right. So glad they got those titles off of Bayley and Sasha to put them on the Iconics, who I admit I laugh at the Iconics, but they are not great ambassadors for the tag team titles in terms of what a lot of people who love the women's revolution want it to be. But we're going to further this Nikki and Alexa's best friend story, Chris. Any thoughts? And if you say no, it's perfectly fine.
No, I don't really care for the Iconics in this role of top of the division characters. I think they're right. Perfectly fine as lower tier characters. And, you know, in a spot you could have had them have a run, but it made no sense to get the belt off of Sasha and Bayley. And the Nikki Cross and Alexa Bliss thing, I think they're trying to stretch out this storyline because it was too obvious initially that Alexa was going to turn on Nikki Cross, and now all you're doing, or at least all I'm doing whenever I'm watching this, is waiting for Alexa to turn on Nikki Cross.
I'm waiting for them to blow this somehow, because I think in their minds they're intending to try and push Nikki Cross here. But I also just think at the end of the day, it's going to be a showcase for Alexa Bliss because they like Alexa Bliss, and there's nothing wrong with their biases. Their biases are not my biases. Even though I like Alexa Bliss, I don't think she should be this all-powerful character that they have on this show. But yeah, that notwithstanding, some programming news as AEW decides to go live week to week starting in October on Wednesdays. NXT rumored to be going to FS1, airing live for 2 hours a night, 8 to 10 p.m. I think this is a bad mistake. I don't think NXT has 2 hours of programming in them every week. And I think being live is an issue because when you record things, you can re-record things. You can edit to make things make sense, or you can edit if people get injured, et cetera, et cetera. I know people want this to be live. I know that they're like, oh man, if it's not live wrestling, people will just ignore it or just DVR it. But I think part of the reason NXT is such a great program is because it's recorded.
I'm going to disagree. I'm going to say that I think that this is an interesting way to counterpunch AEW, and NXT can do 2 hours of television. What you'd have to do is something almost kind of Monday Night Nitro, circa 1996-ish, where the first hour you have opening promo with the actual stars of the brand, the actual champion, or like the Velveteen Dream, whoever is the actual star. And then you have some prelim matches where it is actual people developing. The developing talents of tomorrow, your Humberto Carrillo's a few months ago, or your Angel Garza's now. I think there's room on this card for those people to have matches, and then you can have your weekly hour of television, because you got to remember, you're also working in commercial breaks, too. So 2 hours seems daunting, but when you actually stretch it out and time it out, I think it just looks more like one or two prelim matches and an opening promo of some length, and otherwise you have just a basic NXT-style show.
I think it's a bit of a political hit, too. FS1 does not have the viewership of TNT. FS1 struggles for ratings. It always has. Struggles for eyeballs. A lot of people don't even know where it is on their cable package. A lot of people have to pay extra for it on their cable package. I am just... To me, it's not a real competition. It's an effort to siphon off a few eyeballs. It's a half-assed competition. And I have a bit of a problem with that because my biases are that I really like the NXT brand. And I really would hate to see anything negative happen to it.
I think as well, but I miss the developmental quality of NXT. And it would be nice for them to be able to work that back in some.
I think they're going to end up combining 205 Live with it to get that second hour. I do.
Well, then that would be a different thing.
Yeah.
I don't think I would like that as much. I'm just saying there is a way for them to do 2 hours on television with commercial breaks, and you're not actually stretching it out all that much.
I just think it's like putting up arena ball against the NFL. I just don't see it as... I don't see it as head-to-head competition all that much, but anywho. Those of you interested in geopolitical stuff, WWE has announced the date of its next show in Saudi Arabia. It will be Halloween. I hope to God someone has, or as someone says, I hope someone hasn't told Vince. But I hope someone has told Vince that Halloween displays in Saudi Arabia are against the law. People have been arrested for Halloween parties in Saudi Arabia. You're not allowed to have religious demonstrations of any religion other than Islam.
Book so Abdullah the Butcher.
So a costume battle royal would be the worst idea possible, but that's totally in Vince's wheelhouse.
I think it would be a really good idea. No, that would be a good idea. No, I'm not. I'm not. No, no. You're the sadist who wants them to run shows in Saudi Arabia. I think if we're going
to
do it, we need to make this thing a toilet. No, let's light it on fire. Yeah, like, let's do a Halloween show for real.
Hold on. I know. I want to go against your phrase that I want them to run in Saudi Arabia. I didn't say I want them to run in Saudi Arabia. I say I am ambivalent to the money aspect of it, because I'm just like, look, there's a lot of governments out there that are going to give people money to put shows on. AEW is going to put on a show, or at least send talent over to shows in China, and China ain't exactly, you know.
I'm aware this is also a problematic relationship.
There are problematic relationships is pretty much
no
saying.
I think this is a fair point in the sense that I think WWE gets a free pass on their framing of their relationship with China. Like, if you think that the relationship with China is liberalizing China, but
WWE or AEW.
WWE also has a relationship with China.
Yes, and so does the UFC. UFC.
Yeah. You know, I don't think it's nudging China closer to us in all that much.
You can make the nuanced argument, well, they're not working for the government and doing propaganda. I get that. That's fine,
that's definitely fair.
But everything in China is propaganda in some ways when it comes to American business. So, Look, if Vince got arrested for a costume battle royal, that'd be fine. If the boys got held up because they decided to celebrate Halloween because of something they were told by management to do, that's when I'm not okay with it, Chris. So that's just my point, is that I could see Vince heading out on his jet, leaving his wrestlers there, going, well, I got a developmental system where I could just bring up everybody because I decided to have, you know, a bunch of people dress up as Waldo or something like that.
Well, Mohammed bin Salman is a pretty reasonable guy. I mean, what's the worst that could happen?
WrestleMania 2021, they are lobbying, forces here in Los Angeles are lobbying for it to be in the new Hollywood Park Stadium that will house both the Rams and the Chargers once it's open. Much like the San Jose football stadium kind of got its sea legs by testing it out on the WrestleMania crowd there. I don't know if I will go down to Inglewood if WrestleMania is there. You know, L.A. is L.A., and it's always difficult to get anywhere around here. You know, I'll go to TakeOver on that weekend. I think WrestleMania.
All the satellite shows. Yeah, I think that's the better way to go. And if I was going to do WrestleMania weekend again, I wouldn't be doing WrestleMania unless the card was crazy good. I'd probably be coming out to do the takeovers and the other satellite shows.
The satellite shows in Dallas spoiled me because they were so close to everybody else.
And the food was really good, too, and yes. It was really train accessible. No, I know. It was nice.
So that's it for the news. Do you want to do minor TV recaps or just kind of do it as we go along in our SummerSlam and TakeOver previews?
I feel like at least 205 Live deserves the minor TV recap treatment.
Well,
so
we can do that in because one of the matches from 205 Live ties into SummerSlam, so we can start with that. Drew Gulak will be taking on Oney Lorcan in a singles match for the WWE Cruiserweight Championship. That was solved by a six-pack challenge on 205 Live. As you know, one of my least favorite tropes is putting in multiple person matches for number one contenders.
I'd much rather build them.
I was disappointed, and I felt this match was a bit disappointing. Oney Lorcan's kind of new, which is kind of cool, but
he is a great wrestler. This character hasn't really bonded with me in any meaningful way because it's really just built around him being a bit off. And I like the "if Drew Gulak wants a fight, that's a fight I want" line because it's so weird and circular and yet oddly very fitting with this character. But it's not enough to actually hold on to or latch on to at this point. And I completely agree with you on the multi-man thing. I think it makes Tony Nese kind of look lower tier. And I think it makes all these other guys who have been having nice respective showings feel very plateaued out with one another.
Yeah, and I also just think it makes five people into losers.
I mean, it really...
I mean, they almost put that point over when they were talking about Gallagher and how he hasn't had a title shot in a year and a half. And Gallagher's character reinvention has been pretty good. I would make the notable exception, I hate the umbrella spot coming back. I really do. I think it's too sports entertainment. It's main roster fodder stuff that I don't want here. I was also disappointed. I gotta say, I thought the characterization of Humberto Carrillo on this 205 Live show was pretty bad because he's the clean-cut good guy, and after the match, he's attacking not only Lince Dorado but Grand Metalik, who didn't do anything.
This whole Lucha House Party angle is very confusing, I would say.
Is it confusing to you? Because it seems to me they're going to turn Dorado heel at some point. I think that's fairly clear.
I think that's fairly obvious, yes. But when you introduce Humberto Carrillo attacking Lince Dorado, or I'm sorry, not Lince Dorado, although he did attack Lince Dorado as well, but Grand Metalik, that was weird because I do think, yes, you're right, at some point Lince Dorado becomes a heel, but that's got to be several beats down the road here. First, now they have to settle things up with Humberto Carrillo, who I thought was a babyface being built as a babyface, but he did this, and this was clearly a heel move.
Mm-hmm.
And unless you're going to re-raise and make the entire Lucha House Party heels, I just don't get having Humberto Carrillo doing this week.
I think the Lucha House Party as a heel faction would be interesting.
I agree.
I mean, especially when you watch that match with them and Raul Mendoza, who they didn't follow up on the very next week, which also, that drives me crazy too. When you introduce a guy and then you decide not to follow up on that introduction. I just went, what? But them as heels versus pandering baby faces would be far more interesting and would also eliminate this crap whenever they're in a match with a guy like Humberto Carrillo, where everybody's chanting Lucha, Lucha, when in actuality they're trying to get Humberto over. That's just insane to me.
Yeah, so I think all of those problems need to be resolved. And then you also work in Arya Daivari backstage here. So, I don't know, maybe they're turning Humberto Carrillo heel. There's too many items in this recipe. For my taste, at least.
It's a gumbo, Chris. We just need the roux to bring it all together. That's all we need.
Yes.
I think Gulak wins this one.
I agree.
It's competitive, but I think Gulak finds a way.
I think it's going to be, hard and brawling, but eventually he's going to choke out Oney Lorcan. Not going to tap out, but he is going to choke out.
It's probably going to be on hour one of the pre-show with like a quarter of the audience in there, and they're probably going to work their asses off, and it'll be quickly forgotten. There is a chance, by the way, that there are more matches added as we go, because we still don't have Buddy Murphy, we still don't have Roman Reigns, we still don't have Daniel Bryan, we still don't have Shinsuke versus Ali, which was supposedly being built up, although they beat Ali this week. But there are 10 matches, 9 more to go. Trish Stratus versus Charlotte Flair. Trish representing Canada and Mothers and Legends. And I could care less because Trish Stratus has been coming back for the last year and a half for special shots. So it's not that special. Chris, who do you have in this one?
I think that Charlotte is going to beat Trish. And that is sort of the... We're going to start building Charlotte more as a heel, and that's part of the vehicle.
This is supposedly Trish Stratus's retirement match. I am under the impression that she will look up at the lights, and then there will be a showing of mutual respect, which will further confuse the heel-face dynamic of Charlotte Flair in some way. But I do expect Charlotte Flair to win that one as well. Goldberg coming back for one shot to redeem himself after the last Saudi Arabia show. Taking on Dolph Ziggler. I think I speak for Chris. Chris may disagree with me, but anything other than spear, jackhammer, pin is too much.
Would be ridiculous. Yeah.
And ridiculous. Dolph is here to die for our sins. His characterization has been interesting. But again, 1 week build, pretty much.
Yeah, and I feel like we say Dolph Ziggler is interesting once every 2.5 years for about 3 weeks at a time.
That's a true statement. For the WWE United States Championship, AJ Styles, champion, taking on Ricochet. I think the club gets involved. I think AJ Styles.
You don't
retains.
Say. Yeah.
It should be a good match, though, up until that point. But, you know, story. Finn Balor taking on Bray Wyatt in a singles match. Chris?
I think Finn Balor loses. I think that they don't view Finn Balor as a top-of-the-card champion, face-of-the-company type of guy anymore, and so he is going to eat losses occasionally, and they need to build up this new Bray Wyatt character. So,
the Fiend!
Yeah.
If you didn't hear him say it 23 times during Raw. The Fiend, the Fiend, the Fiend, the Fiend. Him being Michael Cole. I think Finn Balor's losing this one, and I think he's taking a sabbatical until Survivor Series, where he will reappear as the Demon.
And then it'll be the Demon versus the Fiend.
The Fiend, yes, correct.
Wow, that's, man, it's like the worst comic book ever.
In a singles match, Kevin Owens taking on Shane McMahon, with the stipulation that if Kevin Owens loses, he will quit WWE. Chris, what do you have in store for this program?
I think Kevin Owens loses, and then he starts doing a Stone Cold Steve Austin retribution campaign.
I agree. The cool way to do it would be you never see Kevin Owens, but you know it's Kevin Owens. The dopey way to do it would be the way that I think they look at Kevin Owens, which is kind of a new Dusty Rhodes type character. So it may be Kevin Owens under a mask. And I just would be disappointed in that. Yeah, I think because there was a rumored match that was supposed to be Drew McIntyre versus Cedric Alexander on here that has not yet as a post time been announced. But I do think Drew McIntyre probably gets involved in this and gives Kevin Owens a Claymore kick to then help Shane win. How about that?
I think that sounds right.
For the WWE Championship, Kofi Kingston taking on Randy Orton. In at least Orton's been interesting in this build, even though he kind of tunes out from time to time, in my opinion. I think it's a chance for Kofi Kingston to show some aggression. I think it's a chance for Kofi Kingston to break out of character in a bit.
Is Randy Orton actually going to apply himself during this match, or is he going to play the hits slightly better than he has been for the last, let's say, year and a half?
You know what? I think he's going to do Kofi a favor. I think he's gonna come in and really.
If he applies himself, he's still got enough left in the tank. I think he can give Kofi a really good match. But I have seen Randy Orton go and stink it up on high-profile pay-per-view events pretty reliably for the last year and 6 months.
I would agree, but I think what could have been with a nice 6-week build where Randy just keeps on mocking Kofi over and over until Kofi just loses his crap and gets at Randy and says, "I hate you for what you did to me 10 years ago. now I'm going to get my revenge, and it becomes a real kind of bloodlust type feud. I think Kofi Kingston wins, throws some pancakes. They put over much bigger than it is, but I think it's more of a standard match. So, I mean, it'll be a good match, I think. And Kofi will go over, and I think he'll still not mean too much as WWE champion. Bayley taking on Ember Moon for the WWE SmackDown Women's Championship. God, this one has been terrible too. It's
a build that makes you like each one of them less. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
It's a build that killed my interest in either of these two.
I don't really care who wins this fight. I know you guys are going to fight. I'm not even more into this fight than I was before. Initially, when it was just babyface versus babyface, I'd go, oh, this will probably just be a good match. And if you can't make the drama better than just a babyface and another babyface having a good sporting match, then don't override it. Just do the match.
I think Ember Moon has been criminally underused, too, and she's an incredibly likable character as a babyface, which is also why I think she turns heel on Bayley during this match. I think she goes full-on heel as opposed to the, was it, taking advantage of a situation and stuff like that that they usually do to keep two people babyface. I think she goes full heel, perhaps with the help of a Nikki Cross interfering on her behalf through Alexa Bliss, which might help bring Sasha Banks back. Who knows? I don't know. I've heard nothing about Sasha Banks coming back or not. I don't know what's up with her because she's still very active on social media pushing her brand. But I think Bayley retains mostly.
I think that's probably right. Yeah, I don't think they want to put the belt on Ember Moon.
In another women's championship match that hasn't exactly lit the world on fire, Becky Lynch versus Natty in a submission match.
Oh, man, this new Becky Lynch character, she is so likable. This is someone I am behind. Her struggle is my struggle. Who doesn't like being a dick to Natty?
Yeah, but Chris, Natty shoved Trish during their tag match. So obviously that means Trish is the asshole, too. It's just been like that all the way, is that during this build, both characters have become more unlikable each way. And even Becky's natural charm on promos, which has become really played upon, I think, since they teamed her with Seth. It's kind of become a, now I'm going to play professional wrestler promo. I like Becky Lynch a lot. I think she's going to win this match. I think she's not going to be as big of a heel as they think she's going to be in front of this Canadian crowd. I also think, and Chris, you're going to hate this, I think there's a chance of some version of the Montreal Screwjob because they can't help themselves in Toronto.
No way. Not a chance. Really?
Or in Canada.
Not really. Oh, wow. You think they'd do the Montreal Screwjob in Canada? Again, that was so crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah,
they can't help mentioning it. They can't help doing it. And
that's
crazy. And they can't help doing it with a heart. So,
look,
yeah.
if you are going to do Becky Lynch as a heel, I think the one thing that would guarantee her as a heel is if she really paintbrushed Brett. She has to really disrespect Brett, though.
Or made out with Brock on top of Seth's corpse. I think that would also put her over as a heel. But yes, I would agree. Speaking of which, the main event for this show, in what has been the worst-built main event for a major pay-per-view in a long, long time, in my opinion. Brock Lesnar taking on Seth Rollins. Seth Rollins limps down to the ring on Monday with aid of a chair, gets his butt kicked, gets creamed, and then guarantees victory, which is what babyfaces are supposed to do. But if they don't come through, then they're geeks. I think we're just going to replay the hits of him kicking Brock in the balls again, which I think is a played storyline and doesn't get him over as a major single star. I just think Brock wins again. I could see them putting the belt back on Seth, but I don't see what good that does Seth Rollins.
Yeah, I don't see that doing Seth any good. I see the leg injury as an out. But then, what was the whole point of building up Seth Rollins? Because you've really knocked him down a peg again. And I thought, before they put the belt back on Brock Lesnar, I thought for, you know, whatever maybe question marks I had about Seth Rollins. WWE had settled in on him as the de facto face of the company for now. In no small part because you couldn't just keep doing the Brock Lesnar. You can't keep hitting that button. They've been doing the Brock Lesnar thing for years now. And even when they brought him back the first time, it felt like, oh, okay, you're doing this so you can do a heat transfer at some point. Now, who's the heat transferring to? Who's that person? They don't even have that person being built right now.
I don't know, because Roman Reigns is in the middle of a Agatha Christie novel that's not all that clever.
I don't know. I mean, this temp, I think they should look into him a little bit more. I think WWE needs to be taken to the Labor Department because they're not doing good background checks. There are a lot of twists and a lot of turns in this procedural drama that is going on with the forklift operator. Now, what class license did that temp have? We're going to have to go down to the HR department. And then maybe we're going to have to go to an outside ombudsman, someone who can give us a third-party sort of look at this. I mean, this could stretch all the way out to Mania if you play your cards right.
Well, he's getting hit by rental cars that magically get better after the wreck as well. So, I mean, the special effects team is just really on top of this. So yeah. I'm
no, there's a lot of twists, a lot of turns, a lot of ins, a lot of outs, and a lot of moving pieces.
Roman Reigns channeling his inner Vic Mackey and interrogating Buddy Murphy, who Buddy Murphy's pain threshold for giving up people, not exactly the highest in the world. Not the person I want in on a criminal enterprise. Should he be caught by the authorities next time? gave up Eric Rowan quickly, so we don't know where that's going. We don't know if that's going to be part of SummerSlam or not. It seems like they decided to bail on it when they decided they didn't have enough time to build the story. So who knows where we'll go with that. It's enough of the main roster. We're going to get into NXT UK a little bit now as a palate cleanser, so to speak. I liked the continuing story with Ginny and Jazzy Gabbert always beating Xia Brookside until Xia gets a one-on-one match with Ginny. I think that makes sense. They put Piper Niven off with Rhea Ripley, which made sense. I liked that. We got the three-way tag set up between the Grizzled Young Vets. And it looks like we're going to have Gallus and also now...
Andrews and Flash Morgan Webster.
South Wales Subculture, SWSC, is what those jackets were. I thought those jackets were badass. But,
okay, yeah.
But they got buried as hell by the Grizzled Young Vets.
Boy, didn't they? Yeah,
watching that going, yeah, okay, great.
The blocking was really bad, too, where they're standing outside of the ring... And you have Gallus and the Grizzled Young Veterans in the rig, and they just stay on the apron the entire time. They never even come in the rig. I was just like,
Well, God. To me, it's like I kind of wanted the Grizzled Young Vets to look at those two and go, get out of here. You don't deserve this. And build up the match between the team that deserves it and the Grizzled Young Vets. I have no problem with heel-on-heel feuds if you build them correctly, because... One of the heels is going to play babyface in the match anyways. So,
and, Zach Gibson, I mean, it's very interesting, I think, even for the crowd to decide, is it Gallus or is it Gibson, yes, and the Grizzled Young Veterans? I think this could also start establishing Mark Coffey as this kind of weird underdog heel character. The brains of the operation, he could also be the weird de facto baby face. And it gives the crowd, as you were saying, an opportunity to cheer for somebody different in a context that makes sense. And heel versus heel is fun, man. Heel versus heel could be really fun.
Well, we're not going to get those, so let's stop talking about. Ashton Smith lost to Noam Dar.
Whoop!
Whoop! Ashton Smith, Someday they're gonna do a story with him where he's gonna get a big win and nobody's gonna care.
Yeah, no one's gonna care. No, I already know how that story's going.
I know how that story's gonna go. And Noam Dar's promo here. You know what? I hated it at first, and then I turned on it and found it deliciously cheesy that he thinks of himself as a big time free agent and the big time contract that they paid him to come into NXT, but
I like that he's completely full of schmaltz. And yeah. I love when he ends his promos with the thank you boy. Like, I don't know. He's got a character. He's a little bit boring in the ring and all of that. And I certainly right now, I just feel like he's very uninspired. I thought he was better when he was doing more submissions. This particular moveset that he's working is just, there's nothing to it.
What was the main event of this show? I forgot.
Dave Mastiff versus Joe Coffey, which was pretty good. It ended in a double count out. I'm looking forward to the rematch between these guys. Although it's like, where's the hunt at? You know?
Yeah. I mean, Coffey's helped off by Gallus, and Mastiff just has the refs there. I'm like, where are my boys at?
Yeah, right. I thought they were still kind of linked up a little bit. It makes sense for them to be running as a pack.
My favorite thing on this show, I loved during the hype video when they're, you know, when everybody's kind of talking to the camera in character and stuff like that, was Jordan Devlin's absolute fury at not being in the main event.
Oh, I know. Oh,
I thought
so
that was
funny.
Great. That
I
was great.
Love him. He's great.
God, you talk about a guy that last year I could not care less about, and now I just want more of him, man. That's Jordan Devlin. I think he's on my most improved, not because he's become a better wrestler, because he was always a great wrestler, but he found this great personality.
He has more presence. So I think he did become a better wrestler, because it's not just outside of the ring, it's inside of the ring too. He just commands the spotlight a little better now than he did 2 years ago. And so then we had Ilya Dragunov and Cassius Ohno setting the stage for a match here next week.
Cassius Ohno, the big man, versus Ilya Dragunov, the little man who thinks he's a big man. That is going to be interesting.
It is going to be interesting. I'm going to be interested to see how they work that match.
So now we get into the world of NXT TakeOver.
We got a nice little half episode here.
Yeah, for the build, that's true. I'll tell you something. I hate the motif that NXT does. This Nick Miller versus, or it wasn't Nick Miller. It was
Shane Thorne.
Shane Thorne, thank you. I had Nick Miller on the brain because of just, that's his tag team partner. Don't say his tag team partner. Then I say his tag team partner. The Shane Thorne versus the artist formerly known as DJZ, now known as what, Joaquin Wild?
Yes.
This is the NXT trope of, we have a young guy that we haven't really pushed yet, but we see something in that might have potential later as a crowd pleaser, and a guy we're trying to reestablish. So we have a 50-50 match, and nobody cares about either by the end of it.
I felt like Shane Thorne, with no reintroduction, when they were recapping all the stuff he did when he was in TM61, I was like, oh, yeah.
Show me that.
Yeah, I know. They really need to show people that.
In the midst of a promo where he's cutting about going, I'm going after all these guys in this tournament.
Why does Eddie Dennis gets those. Why can't Shane Thorne?
Yes, a Shane Thorne promo video showing the highlights of him doing the jump off the scaffolds and stuff like that, which most people have forgotten that he was the... As I think Rob McCarron put it more bluntly and a little bit too cruelly, he was the one with talent in TM61. Doing all these things, and then the angry promo with Mauro, and then him just looking in the camera and going, I'm going after all of them because they're taking a spot that's mine. And then you have a story where week to week, he goes after each one of these guys in the tournament until he gets to the one guy he doesn't beat, and then it becomes a feud. That would have been great. Here, it's like, when he stormed off after the match, I thought something had happened at first. I was like, what is he doing? I just didn't care for it. I thought this match was booked poorly in a way. And I just think both people, by the end of it, sure, they each had moves, but at the end, it was like, it's a 50-50 match and nobody cares about either of the 50.
Yeah, well, it's a 50-50 match, except that at the end of it, DJZ is now 0-2. So this is supposed to be a breakout star and he's not breaking out. He's going the other way. And then we had I actually kind of liked the promo with the Street Profits and the Undisputed Era at points. So
Red
there was
Dragon.
Yeah, yeah, Red Dragon. Yeah, that's what I was gonna call him, Red Dragon, because I'm like having old gimmick day.
I could hear the hesitation. I'm like, he wants to say Red Dragon, and he's trying to remember the name of their stable in NXT.
So I liked the part when Tez took off the glasses and started talking about winning, and it just kind of ended with like saying win over and over and over again. He was really good there, but man, the shticky thing that O'Reilly and Bobby Fish were doing wasn't quite landing, and the O'Reilly auto parts and Lawrence Fishburne Jr. thing was try-hardy. It was really try-hardy.
Chris, I'm of the opinion, and I am not going to toot my own horn much, but toot, toot. If you gave me 3 weeks with Montez Ford, I could make him into a world champion with swagger. I could. That kid, I mean, this show has been a big fan of him for a while. He has main event presence in him. And then he goes goofy, and you just go, what the hell?
Right,
because he had the nice clothes on. You put him in a nice suit and a world title belt, and you kind of give him what we like to call championship heft, and you make him serious. He is great, but him shouting "win" and that goofy ass New Age Outlaws ripoff introduction of Fish and O'Reilly, I just went, my God, they don't
know what these guys are. So, see, like, I don't hate the win thing, but I definitely share the sense that
it needed to be more intense. As
each
they
one of these things
of
is disjointed. Like there are different beats in this promo, and the beats, one is the knockoff of the New Age Outlaws. And, like, I have one hand out, and I go, well, it's interesting, because, like, they do sort of comp, in my opinion, favorably to the Outlaws. I think they're a better team. And I think that, you know, even in terms of one-line delivery, Angelo Dawkins is much better than Billy Gunn ever was. I liked what Angelo Dawkins says he was going to beat that ass. I thought that was a good line.
Oh, that was great. That was great.
Yeah.
For the win part, I just want him to start shouting win, win, and getting closer and then getting in their faces a little bit to intimidate them a bit.
Yes, yes, absolutely.
A little bit of a fight feel. As for the O'Reilly and Fish part, part of my problem with Bobby Fish is he has the grizzled veteran look, and his tone is way too upper register. I hate to say that because he can't help your voice. But if he had more bass in his voice, he'd be a much better grizzled veteran. That said, Kyle O'Reilly does the best high school girl impression I've ever seen on any wrestler.
He's so funny.
Impression, I mean, he's playing a character here, obviously.
Yeah. Yeah, no,
but the way he
say.
Does it, someone told him, channel somebody from Mean Girls, and he's doing it great. I have no problem with O'Reilly's part of this. He was supposed to be goofy here. And I think it's weird because I look at a team like Fish and O'Reilly, and I want them to be a little bit more revival in their delivery in terms of, we are technical masters and we can break your arm anytime we want to.
I think the whole point here is for them to look formidable, but also not too. They don't want them to steal the spotlight from the Street Profits, because, I mean, this company right now was clearly, you know, emphasizing the Street Profits. I don't think that the Undisputed Era are defeating the Street Profits here at SummerSlam.
We'll get to that. I think it's weird that there was. They built it up in the promo, and then they never got to the real point, to me, which was
when they were signing the contract. That felt really anticlimactic, right?
There were two things in there that they should have probably built on a little bit in the promo. They should have built on the obvious size differential between the Street Profits and Fish and O'Reilly. And the other thing was during Dawkins's promo. He's laying out this history. You've beaten every team that's come through here. And he lists all these teams, but you haven't beat us one-on-one. That's fine. But he also should have looked at them and goes, but it also begs the question, if you're so good, why are you still here? And I think that can be played upon in certain NXT angles, if it's still a developmental territory, so to speak. Why are you still here and not on the main roster if you're that good of a team? And I think that needed to be played up a little bit in this promo. I don't know how you feel about it. It's just one of those things.
I don't know if that's a stylistic choice. It's a strong stylistic choice that you have to make about what the NXT brand is, and it has implications far beyond this angle. I think that Trips has this vision of NXT as hashtag the best brand in the world, although obviously not better than Raw or SmackDown, but like NXT is part of WWE and it is its own brand. It's not trying to compete with anything. It's there. This is the main event. You are the main event.
But you can also do it without trashing NXT. You can also say, hey, look, maybe they don't see anything in you. Maybe, you know, you can do the why are you still in NXT without undermining NXT in some ways. Maybe I'm not smart enough to figure it out right now. But we also had this half the episode promo video package of Adam Cole and Johnny Gargano, and it dropped some clues to me about what the third fall stipulation is going to be. I liked the promo. I just didn't want this on NXT television per se, I guess, unless you're going to do this for all the programs, and they kind of did in its own way. So maybe, no, I'm going to backtrack. I liked this. I liked having a go-home video for this. So, I mean, I was fine with it. I think you didn't like it because you wanted an hour of wrestling.
Well, I think you really pulled the steam out of the episode when you blow off the Matt Riddle and Killian Dane supposed main event.
Okay, and I can get there.
Yeah, now I'm like, okay, so that was the main event. So then what's happening now? Oh, a video package to bring us out.
You thought it was a cop-out, and that's why they did the
If I was editing this show, I wouldn't have even changed the length of that video package. I just would have left, like, 5 minutes left in the hour and had them coming out, and you're like, well, how are they going to have a match in 5 minutes? And then, like, have that angle to end the show, which is much more dramatic and also gets us ready for more wrestling at TakeOver.
So before we get into our preview, Chris, I'm going to ask a question, but you've already answered it, but I'm going to ask it nevertheless. One of the underlying storylines of this NXT TakeOver is the prophecy of the Undisputed Era leaving Toronto with all the gold. Do you think that the Undisputed Era leaves with the North American title, the NXT title, and the tag team titles?
Nope.
I think there is a good chance they do. I think there's probably a better chance that they leave with two out of those three and that the one on the outside is eventually turned on by the group. But we will get into that in a bit. Starting with Candice LeRae versus Io Shirai in a singles match. I have liked this build. I haven't loved this build, but I think it's also kind of it's kind of obvious that Candice really has no shot in this match.
Right, yeah, no, this one really feels like a foregone conclusion. It would make no sense to have Candice beat Io Shirai unless you wanted to really put the rocket on Candice to go ahead and face Shayna Baszler. But they haven't really done any of the float on a Candice-Shayna Baszler future at all to make me think that it's going to be anything other than Io Shirai prevailing over Candice in relatively short order. I think it'll be competitive enough, but I think Candice gets maybe 35% of this match and Io takes the other 65%.
I think there's a chance they end this with a DQ. And then crowd may crap on it after that. That's the problem. Because NXT wants clean finishes, but I could see them having a great match and then bailing on it and just giving Io a DQ loss to Candice to set up something.
And she just massacres Candice a whole bunch to end the match. Yeah. And potentially.
For the NXT Women's Championship, Shayna Baszler to the champion taking on Mia Yim. I don't see them putting this title on Mia Yim unless they're bringing up Shayna Baszler on the Raw after Survivor Series. I don't see any shot at it. I've been wrong before, though. I give it about a 10% chance Mia Yim gets this title. But I think Shayna Baszler destroys her.
Yeah, I think that this is more competitive than Io and Candice, right? But that probably translates to 55-45. I get the Mia Yim story now, which is we have to take out the friends of Shayna Baszler because look at how the friends of Shayna Baszler have been protecting Shayna Baszler at key times when Shayna's really been in trouble here. And I think they did a good job telling that story here in the final week, but Mia Yim really should have said that more explicitly before she started attacking Marina Shafir and Jessamyn Duke in the build-up to this match.
Here's the logical flaw in that story, Chris. You take out Shayna Baszler's friends because they interfere in key times, and then Shayna Baszler just beats you clean.
Right, that makes you look like an idiot.
It makes you look like a...
Also, the
also
way that
Shayna
she
look more talented. It's
and
it's
the way
weird.
She took out Marina and Jessamyn was... It was meant to be hashtag street, and so there's like two problems with that. One is the way she was doing it was also just kind of bluntly heelish, where she was coming up on these people in darkness from behind and blindsiding them and attacking them. Marina and Jessamyn suck, but, you know, attacking somebody with a car door, that felt a little bit extreme. And then you have Shayna Baszler the next week saying stuff like street trash, which also has all these other connotations. And, like, I think this match will be good, but I've never really thought that Mia has much of a chance of winning this match. And so now that I'm saying this, you're maybe talking me back into the Street Profits getting screwed out of their NXT championships and then having to go up to Raw. But...
What does it have to do with Mia and Shayna?
Well, because they like to have a certain amount of title changes on an NXT card.
Okay.
So that is important.
I just wasn't putting the two together. It's like, it makes me think of this match and makes me think the Street Profits are getting... What?
You gotta connect these dots. All these pieces move together when you need
to connect these dots.
No,
you
connect them. You connect them.
For the NXT North American Championship, the Velveteen Dream, the champion, taking on Pete Dunne and Roderick Strong. I will go first on this one. I think there is a very good chance that Velveteen Dream drops this title to one of the other two and then gets put into the NXT Championship title picture. And I think if that happens, I think the natural story here is for Roderick Strong to win the title and for Pete Dunne to chase him as a measure of revenge. So I'm going with Roderick Strong to win the championship here.
Interesting. I kind of like that. I could see Roderick Strong. I could also see Pete Dunne winning this because you've got Adam Cole as champion, and you want to have a strong babyface who can sort of be diametrically opposed as the mid-card champion. And Velveteen Dream has been occupying a weird... Wienerish role. He's one thing one week and he's another thing another week. He's Hogan one week, he's Macho Man the next week. And that's fine, but it also kind of screams holding pattern. It doesn't scream telling a story that has any end game that builds up Velveteen Dream more. And so I'm with you. I think the belt changes. I'm going to say Dunn, not Roderick Strong. I think Roderick is, in your version of events, the odd man out here at the end of the night.
Yeah, I'm thinking of bigger things for Velveteen Dream at this point. For the NXT Tag Team Championship, the aforementioned Street Profits of Angelo Dawkins and Montez Ford taking on the Undisputed Era team of Kyle O'Reilly and Bobby Fish. Chris, I will allow you the floor. Who wins this match?
Oh, man. Jeff, you have taken me around the park on this one now. This is hard. This is really
hard.
Would you
like me to go first since you're still kind of contemplating your options?
No, I don't want you to go first. I'm going to say that the Street Profits defeat the Undisputed Era.
I'm going to go the other way. I'm going to say the Undisputed Era win this, probably with the help of Roddy Strong in some ways. if Roddy Strong has already wrestled. I think the Street Profits are earmarked for Raw, having been on there week after week after week. I think the easiest way to then transition them as to performers on Raw is to have them lose the belts in some sort of chicanerous fashion so that they are not seen as weak for losing in the eyes of the guy who writes the show. Even though they lose, they get screwed, so we should be all up in arms. Boo! Boo! They got screwed. This shouldn't happen to them, but they are going to get the... I think they are not long for NXT, and I think they are going to be the Greek chorus on Raw and probably performers on there.
Yeah. The Raw's answer of the New Day?
Yes. That's pretty much it right there. Exactly. They're going to be entertaining and non-threatening and all those other coded words that we use for the New Day, so to speak. But yes, they are going to be Raw's New Day. Then finally, for the NXT Championship, Adam Cole, the champion, taking on Johnny Gargano in a 2 out of 3 falls match. I have called my shot on Twitter earlier this morning. The first fall is a street fight, as chosen by one John Gargano. The second match, a straight-up one-on-one wrestling match, as put out there by Adam Cole. There are a number of different stipulations that William Regal can choose from. A ladder match, a Hell in the Cell, a bunkhouse match, a lumberjack match, a 2 out of 3 falls match for the third fall. Any type of thing like this. But I think Regal is going to come out and say, let's have some real stakes to this. Judging from the video package and all the nostalgia by Johnny Gargano and all the touring by Adam Cole and how much fun it was, I am going to say
Johnny's parents on a pole.
Don't interrupt me in the middle of my monologue. I am going to say that the William Regal stipulation for a third fall, and there will be a third fall, will be loser leaves NXT. And I think Adam Cole will win this match, thus putting into question what's going to happen to Johnny Gargano. Chris, your thoughts?
I think that sounds plausible. Johnny does seem like he's at the end of the road for his story. But if you do the loser leaves NXT story, you could also have Johnny come back as a Mr. Wrestling type character under the mask, do what we have talked about, that Dusty Rhodes style character.
I could see Tommaso Ciampa screwing Johnny Gargano out of that third fall and taking away everything he ever loved. There's a lot of possibilities here. I don't know if Gargano goes to the main roster. I don't know if he goes to 205 Live, or I don't know if they just take him off TV for a while.
And see, if they're not getting rid of Adam Cole here, I think Tommaso comes back as Tommaso the Redeemer. He also loses, but he comes back and tries to fight for his buddy Johnny's honor.
That could be it, too. I also, there is 10% chance of me, given that this Undisputed Era storyline has been an undercurrent throughout the entire build. And with the way that Adam Cole won when he was the only title holder, I could see them doing this. Roderick Strong wins the North American title. Fish and O'Reilly win the tag team titles. And Adam Cole loses his title. And the other three are just so tired of his crap that on his way out, after losing a Loser Leaves NXT title match, that the three of them punk him out.
But I don't think that they've done enough to earn that spot. Adam okay. Cole has not been enough of an insufferable dick to the guys. He needs to be more self-invested and more self-absorbed and more self-preserving in order to really justify that, man, you've been screwing over your boys moment. Like, what he would need to do, they don't have the authors paying around anymore. But, like, the Undisputed Era would have to be getting massacred by the authors of pain. And Adam Cole's on the outside, and he's holding a chair, and he could go in and save O'Reilly and Fish and Strong, but instead looks at the chair, looks at the Authors of Pain, and he's like, nah, I'm not doing that. But they haven't earned that spot. They haven't made me really think, wow, Adam Cole's a garbage leader. They've made me go, yeah, I don't like Adam Cole, but they're all dicks. They're heels. They're the Undisputed Era. It's not, well, the Undisputed Era are a bunch of heels, but that Adam Cole is a real piece of work.
I think Undisputed Era should all be brought up as a stable, too. That's my opinion. I like stables, though, so I'm kind of in the minority versus Vince McMahon on that.
And that's the problem. Is it's like, why bring him up to either one of these main rosters as a stable when Vince just doesn't like working with stables as a narrative unit?
That being said, I am going to go with Gargano losing this, and I am going to predict it is a loser leaves NXT match.
Him going to 205 Live makes a lot of sense, right?
Yeah, a bit, but he's already been on the main roster, so I don't know do you want to put him on a roster that doesn't seem long for this world? And plus, when you're putting NXT on live television, do you want to give up one of your most likable stars? I don't know.
And we were talking earlier about 205 Live possibly getting dropped into the second hour of NXT when it runs on FS1. So
I think you take him off TV to rest up his knees, because that's why he hasn't been wrestling all that much this year. And bring him back for when you put them on terrestrial television. Find a way to have him get his win back. But I have talked enough. Chris, what is the way you see this 2 out of 3 falls match? And also make an speculative call.
Yeah,
a speculative call on the third fall, on the third match stipulation.
I mean, loser leaves town feels right. More right, of course, is Johnny's parents on a pole, and if Cole wins, then he gets to own Johnny's dad for a month, or he gets control of the pizzeria. The pizzeria's on the line.
I honestly think the easiest thing to do is a ladder match. Is you have these two who have killed each other in a wrestling match, in a street fight, and then all of a sudden you see the title getting put on a hook and getting lifted, and the two of them just exhausted and just going, really? We have to do that now? And the crowd going apeshit for it.
It could also be last man standing. I could see that. Yeah, so there's a few ways to go. I like loser leaves town. That does feel... that feels final. But I could also see last man standing. So that's going to be my call.
Well, that does it for our TakeOver and SummerSlam previews. Another show I was on this week on the Voices of Wrestling Family, Music of the Mat. Interesting choices for real songs of the territories, songs that didn't quite fit or were used ironically. I think it was a fairly fun show with myself and young Andrew Rich. You can get that on the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network, or just search your podcast feed for Music of the Mat. You can find it that way. I am at Crap Game 13. Chris is at Chris Novembrino. Chris also does certain audio shows of various subjects that he likes to plug on here, and he will do so at this time.
Don'tWorry.tv is my other show. Don't Worry About the Government on iTunes, on Stitcher, doing news and politics. We also have the All in the Family podcast, which you can find at allinthefamilypodcast.com.
There is a chance, a small one, I didn't want to plug in the beginning because I don't want to get any false hope up there, that there will be a Hot Takes show after SummerSlam with one Rob McCarron and possibly myself. Possibly Chris, if he's around, I don't know. I was hoping to do one after TakeOver. I may just do a Patreon-only one for
is
TakeOver.
Is
just
Friday or Saturday night? It doesn't really matter.
TakeOver is Saturday night.
Oh, yeah. And I'll probably be around.
I figured you'd be busy.
No.
Oh, will you? Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Maybe we can record something then.
Yeah. Yeah. That'll be my way of apologizing to the premium listeners for the fact that I apparently used the computer mic for this entire episode.
Oh, no.
The level should be fine, but, you know, there are some people who are probably going to be like, why is his audio wrong on this episode? And that's why I use the computer mic. Sorry about that,
but,
guys.
Okay, that's cool. And then we can do that. And God, there was something I was going to say, and I forgot what I was going
to
say.
I'm sorry. I didn't mean to derail you. It's going to be okay. I mean, mistakes happen.
Derailed.
No, nobody's perfect, Jeff.
Oh, patreon.com/shakethemropes.
Yes.
Yeah, it's kicking a buck. You can listen to all our special audio shows there.
You get the good microphones. Yeah.
The freaking Jim. I keep saying Jim Carrey. The Andy Kaufman, Jerry Lawler episode, the Muda Hakushi episode, the watch-alongs. I just did one last week, which was October 19th, 1985, Mid-Atlantic Wrestling on the network. Some fun things, some watch-alongs, all sorts of goodies on the Patreon for as little as $1 a month. But other than that, I forgot what I was going to say because I was derailed by Chris's guitar case, and he's going to give me his phone number later, so I call him for a date.
I look good.
Here it comes again, lunch. Will it be the same old, or are you ready to take a vacation from the ordinary with the new Jamaican Jerk Turkey Sub at Firehouse Subs? Freshly sliced smoked turkey breast, craveably sweet mustard sauce, and a hint of Caribbean seasoning. Just $5.55 for a medium. Save time. Order the new Jamaican Jerk Turkey Sub on the Firehouse Subs app. Firehouse Subs. Enjoy more subs. Save more lives. Participating locations, limited time only, plus tax. Prices may vary for delivery.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.